Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 370 for comics originally released on September 10th, 2014. Now, starting us off in DC is Justice League United Future's End number 1. This is one of the many Future End books. This is one I was kind of excited about, Drew, because it had Dawnstar on the cover, and I'm like, oh yeah, they're bringing back the Legion of Superheroes. This must be the issue they return in. And, of course, this is a Future's End, so it's set 5 years in the future, long after they've returned to the present day or done something in the present day or whatever they're going to do whenever they get around to it. The storyline I'm really looking forward to turns out not to be here, but is going to be in the upcoming Justice League United annual, where apparently the Legion comes back saying, you know, hey, the future's not what it used to be, like, existing. How much of the Future's End stuff have you been reading, Drew?
I've read about a half a dozen of these so far.
Okay. And
mixed reviews.
Fair. Very understandable. I've had a few mixed reviews on some of them myself. One or two very negative. Grayson, surprisingly. We talked about that one. Have you been reading the New 52 Future's End?
I started and I haven't read it lately. I haven't read it for 10 issues.
Okay. This, again, was not quite what I was expecting in terms of the Legion appearance. And as far as just general Futures End stuff goes, I thought it was okay, but there were a lot of things that were just kind of taken for granted here. Equinox seems to be treated as a firmly established character, which 5 years from now she very well may be. But for those of us in the current day, not so much. You know, Dawnstar from the Legion is just kind of dropped in here inexplicably, so if you don't know who she is, again, going to be a little lost. It didn't have the Legion stuff that I was mistakenly expecting, but it also, frankly, didn't really seem to have the Justice League United aspect I was expecting. We get Equinox, the least fleshed-out character out of the bunch in the regular aspect of the monthly series. We get Martian Manhunter, who's kind of in a voiceover capacity, almost. We get Animal Man guest starring, and then, like, nothing else from the rest of the team. I mean, they're mentioned. How much of Justice League United have you been reading?
Did we not review the first issue?
We did the first issue. Have you read anything after that?
No.
Okay, so you probably aren't going to miss those characters.
No.
The selection of characters was a little wanting, in my opinion. The art was good, but the story... a lot of things, again, 5 years later, it's a little, not inaccessible, but unfamiliar. And the whole motivation of the story is Equinox gets a telepathic message from the Martian Manhunter of, people have escaped. And we get a series of, reveals, but exposition, really, that there's this prison they've set up on Mars. Three levels of security that we get in this, not great, but this explicit exposition from Cyborg, who's now the leader of the Justice League 5 years from now, saying there are three levels of security. And let me walk through this and see if you can pick out the subtle flaw in the plan that these heroes have. The three levels include the prison, which we know is compromised because these guys are escaping. The Martian Manhunter, who's telepathically keeping them docile. We can presume he's more or less defeated because they're escaping. And an energy shield around Mars. So the plan, fly a shuttle through the energy field, because the shuttle can bypass it, land on Mars, and go see what's going on. Does this not seem like driving the getaway car to the bank robbers, essentially?
Yes, and that's what it turned out to be.
Horrible plan. The Justice League used to have teleporters. What the hell happened to those? Can they not have, like, a remote-controlled system that you can teleport to the planet, but only people off-planet can get you off or something? Granted, with shapeshifters, that too could be easily gotten past. But the characters just seem to be doing really stupid things in a few places. It was okay, but it was almost a random assembly of characters here. I didn't dislike it, but it was the epitome of an average comic in many respects. What were your thoughts?
I can definitely echo that. And I feel partially responsible for these reviews lately on the DC side. It seems like I really seem to gravitate more towards the indie stuff, and I like a lot more of the Marvel stuff, and I seem to be hating on DC a lot lately. And I don't mean to do that. I really don't. I'm not a DC hater. I'm not like that, but I've had a bad run of luck lately on the DC titles, and I really haven't liked any of them, and this one would fall in that category. This was just okay, you know, and I didn't really enjoy reading it, but I read it. It was okay. It part one of two, part two of which is in Justice League Future's End, I believe, next week or...
Let me touch on that for just a moment. Because at the end, it's basically saying, yep, there's more. It's concluded in next week in Future's End : Justice League number one. I'm like, well, that's kind of odd. Everything else has been called Justice League : Future's End number one. It's like they're not even clear how they're naming these things.
I didn't even catch that, yeah.
And it's like, come on, guys. That was, yeah. So yeah, part one of a two-part, and I don't recall the solicit having any indication that was going to be the case.
Yeah, and it doesn't really make me that interested in seeing how this pans out. I mean, you know, it could be some interesting stuff. I don't know. It's really average, and for me, I didn't really enjoy it, so it's more of a two for me.
I can understand that. I mean, to me, it was a three, but it was just kind of a very average book. The fight we get is just kind of there. It's a random slugfest, no real characterization or anything there. I'm still puzzled by the nature of Equinox and all of her, you know, powers and what she can do and why I should care. Stormguard, we've seen a bit of in the Future's End era, but he hasn't really been established well in my mind. This didn't have any fatal flaws or any cheese. I can't believe they published this. It just seemed to be ill-timed in terms of what was going on with Justice League United, featuring the one character they really hadn't effectively set up of Equinox, and just telling a pedestrian story. One where, again, some of the logic that the heroes have just didn't make sense. Maybe the second part will redeem it, but I'm not holding out hope for that.
Yeah, so. I mean, the whole concept of Future's End, though, I mean, some of them have been working. I enjoyed both Batgirl and Batman Future's End this week. I thought those were really, really interesting and well done. So you can... This format works. It just doesn't seem to be working consistently.
It doesn't work universally. It's not a guaranteed work.
Yeah. Whereas I felt last September's Villain Month had a lot more consistently good reads in it so far.
Even if some of them didn't really go anywhere, they were well done.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah, sure.
This is Edge of Spider-Verse number one. This is featuring Spider-Man Noir. This was a character who's featured in a four-issue miniseries a couple of years back. Did you read that miniseries?
No. I thought this was a new thing.
I hadn't read the miniseries either, to be honest. I sat out of a lot of the Noir stuff, other than maybe like whatever the first one of them was. And they did a half dozen or so of them. So I came into this, like you, unfamiliar with this version of Spider-Man. I was very pleased how well they introduced the character, the time frame, and just the situation. I'm assuming some of the exposition we get in this recaps what happened in that miniseries, but not having read it, it was new to me, and it was not bad as far as exposition goes. So I really, frankly, over the course of this issue, grew to enjoy this character and, you know, his trials and tribulations, and I'm considering if I want to go hunt down that miniseries and check it out.
Now that you mention it, yeah, that sounds kind of interesting, because he is a cool character. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the, I believe it was 32 of Superior that kind of launched us into this Spider-Verse tale, and this was a cool little backstory for one of the spiders that Doc Ock is gathering up and to fight the menace. And so I really liked it. I thought it was really well done. And I imagine next issue will be another, you know, another spider character that is getting gathered up, and we'll get a little of their backstory, and we'll do that through the miniseries, and that seems fun, leading up into the Battle Royale at the, what, probably End in Amazing or something like that.
Well, on the first page, they had the Little Edge of Spider-Verse blurb, and they basically pitched that each issue of this miniseries will introduce you to an amazing and different fascinating spider character who will play a role in Spider-Verse. And then this one happens to be Spider-Man Noir. Next one's going to be a female version, a Gwen Stacy Spider-Woman, I would assume.
And then there was a whole mess of them, a whole gaggle of Spider-Men and Spider-People at the end of 32. And so, I mean, since we've already seen them, does that mean we won't, they're already here, so they don't get their stories? Or will we see some of them, I wonder, highlighted throughout this mini?
I would have to go back and see which characters were shown there and see if they match the ones that we're going to see here. I don't recall.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing this character. He would have stood out to me, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember him. So, is David Hein, does he do a lot of writing? I don't recognize the name.
I think so. I think he's done a fair amount. Not he's like,
is he a Marvel guy?
I'm thinking so. I would have to pull up like ComicBookDB to double check. I recognize the name, and I think he's done some other stuff, certainly for Marvel. I don't recall him on any DC titles, but again, I spend more time reading the story than memorizing the credits, and with the amount I read, it's easy for me to forget who's done what.
Yeah, I didn't do a name check when I saw his name. Wasn't sure.
I think he did a great job here, and to me, the fact that I came out of this with a blank slate in terms of the Spider-Man noir, wanting to learn more, that's a great, great sign.
I guess he wrote it with Fabrice Sapolsky, so it looks like it was a co-written book.
And Fabrice's name, I don't really recognize, so yeah. I don't know how much Fabrice has done.
Yeah, I mean, this is excellently executed because, you know, it's a period piece, so you never know how that's going to work, and, you know, and it did. It really felt rooted in a different time, and I liked that. I thought that worked really well. It didn't seem out of place at all, and look, character was interesting, and art was fine, really. I think it's Isonov, maybe, is the artist, and it was really competently done, too, and so I enjoyed this whole thing, so I gave it 4.
Yeah, to me, it was a very solid 4 out of 5. You know, it told a good story, it didn't assume that you were familiar with the character, and it led into the Spider-Verse stuff very well, and in a way that was more a almost epilogue sort of a thing versus, you know, all set up just for that. We got a solid story, regardless of if you read Spider-Verse or not, which I really liked. Shall we move on to our other book of the week?
Yes.
This is Copperhead #1. This is from Image Comics. This is written by Jay Farber, who has done Dynamo 5, Noble Causes, a number of other things over the years. He's been a writer I followed for quite some time. Love his work. And this was one that I was kind of on the fence on. It's like, geez, you know, every month, Image has got, you know, 5 or 6 new #1s. There's only so many I'm really kind of interested in. And this was one of those, it's a Western in space. I've seen Westerns in space. Some are good, some not so much. Once I realized it was Jay Farber, though, it's like, yeah, I'm definitely going to try this out, see what I think. Are you familiar with his other work?
I don't think so. It didn't ring a bell when you were rattling them off. So, no, I don't think I've read his other stuff.
All right. This is fairly different than his other stuff. The high concept here is it's a Western in space, and we're following the adventures of a new sheriff in a frontier town as she arrives with her young son. And as with any true #1 like this, starting with a blank slate, they got to build everything up. And just in the opening couple of captions, we get the sense of, you know, space travel, some of the stuff. We learn a lot about some of these characters fairly quickly, some through dialogue and exposition, some through action, and some through interaction, particularly with the deputy. And it just gets very interesting very fast for me. And it's fun. It's got a sense of personality to it. It's something that reminds me in some respects of Defiance on television, Revolution, and some other, in that case, that's post-apocalyptic, but you know what I mean, kind of a more frontier town kind of a setup. So I was really pleased with this. I thought the story really kind of started up, moved along nicely, and ended you could argue on a cliffhanger reveal, but you really didn't leave this issue feeling incomplete. It felt like it was more, this is just the start of the ongoing life of the sheriff and her son in Copperhead. We got to stop somewhere. We've done some stuff. Let's pause here and we'll pick it up next issue. So a smooth stopping point, I thought.
Oh, yeah, it worked really well. I think the deputy was the highlight for me. I thought he was a great character, and their interactions were top-notch and really fleshed him out well. I like the sheriff a lot. Her son is a great character as well. Doesn't do what he's told.
Kind of does.
Yeah, he drifts a little bit, but, you know, what are you going to do? He's young and interested in what's going on out there. So that's cool. The nice little aliens that inhabit this world, and they're various and unique. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of cool to explore that. We meet the big bad guy that will probably be her foil going forward is the boss hog, very rich guy.
Yeah, I made that connection too, yeah.
Yeah, seems like he's going to be a recurring problem for her, and she sniffs him out pretty quickly, just what he's all about. So that's to be continued. We saw just enough, I think, to plant that seed. She's also hiding some stuff. We don't know what she's running from. She's running from something. Her and her son are running from something. We don't know what that is. Yeah, we just don't know what that is yet. And it's done subtly enough that it's not hammering it over the head. It just kind of is mentioned a little and dropped. But I want to know exactly what happened wherever she was at.
Yeah, to me, that's a second or third story arc down the line. Once we've gotten to really know her and she's comfortable in the status quo, then it's time for her past to come back and haunt her.
Yeah, and it was really done very well. Introduced you to all the characters I think you probably will need to know. There'll probably be a criminal of the week type of element every time, criminal of the month every time the issue comes out, and there'll be some case that she'll fight and solve. And
as far as recurring, though, I'm kind of thinking we're going to have the equivalent of a bar owner or a hotel owner, saloon owner kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Where's the local watering hole where she can get information?
And that's to be determined as well. We haven't really fleshed that out. But it did a really good job for a first issue. And, you know, it's not a double-sized issue. It's kind of normal-sized number of pages, I think, 28 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And it just told a really great story, beginning and middle and end. And I even like the art. I thought the color palette was really kind of a lot of reds, a lot of, you know, this Tatooine type of landscape they've got going on here. And
a fair amount of earth tones reinforcing it's a Western.
Yeah, yeah, and it worked. It worked. Hopefully the kid's not in too much trouble. He gets in a little scrape towards the end and meets a girl, though, so that always helps.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, there's some great stuff in here, a lot of good characters, and man, I like a lot about this, and I'll continue to read it. I was sampling this, so I was not all in from the beginning. I just wanted to try it out, but I liked it enough that I'm going to stick around, and it's a solid 4 for me.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. It was one of those that I wasn't sure if I was going to continue with it or not. I'd have to see if I pre-ordered a few more. I may have given Fairbird the benefit of the doubt, but really, there shouldn't have been much doubt. This is some great stuff. It really built the world effectively in this issue. I loved the design sense, like at the police cruiser. It's got kind of a mix between a Star Wars land speeder and almost a TIE fighter, not quite, you know, kind of a looking thing. It's a fun look for the technology here. And again, like you said, the deputy is a lot of fun, really vibrant personality there that I'm looking to see how they come to terms and what terms those are.
Yeah, and there's also this a little bit with the deputy where there's a mention of that these, it's almost like an elephant men quality to it. If you know, they brought them back into society after having these elephant men, you know, work and do in the wars. And there seems to be something like that here, too, that we don't know much about.
And it's very subtly done. There's a mention of after the war ended, we were supposed to be fully assimilated. Yes. We're always in second position. And I'm looking forward to how that aspect of the story, which was very artfully put in here in a non-heavy exposition way. I want to see how that plays out.
Yeah, the way that the writer does this, it's not heavy-handed. He gives us credit as readers
mm-hmm.
that we'll pick up on these things. They're just laid at our feet, and if you see them, you see them. And I'm assuming that they're significant enough they'll come back, and I like that. And I don't. It doesn't have to come back next issue, but I like the fact that he's planting these seeds that will take place later.
Yeah, I certainly don't expect all of this in the next issue, the current story arc, or even the one after that. Some of these may take a little while to play out, but that's cool that all of these seeds are kind of planted here to germinate, grow, and mature as time progresses. Right, this is some solid stuff, and he's doing a great job. I'm going to be curious to see how well this sells, both on the first issue and kind of the first handful. I expect it'll do the usual dip a little, but the question is, around that third or fourth issue, will it have caught on? Will this be another thing that's a good, solid seller for Image these days? I think it's got a much better chance of it now than if this same sort of thing had come out, say, 5 years ago. I just
think, or if this was a boom or a Dark Horse title, you know? I mean, it feels a little like Resident Alien, kind of, to me, that sensibility, and I don't think that book sells as well as it should. You know, there's a lot of stuff over at some of these smaller publishers that just don't get the sales, and but they'd be great if it had the Image eye, it would probably sell twice as many titles as it does.
Yeah, I think right now, for this kind of a book, Image has enough success with things like Saga and whatnot that this may benefit from that, and I hope it does. Because the more successful titles Image has, just the better off for everybody.
Yeah, shop owners will put them on the shelves.
So how much else have you read this week?
You know, it was not that heavy of a week, maybe 15 books, 20 books. You know, Walking Dead, 131, that was really good.
Yeah, great stuff there.
I enjoyed that a lot. Velvet, number 7, came out. Wonderful Ed Brubaker book that's just fantastic. I'm loving that. And Spread, number 3, that's another Image book that's a little gory, but really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Magneto 9 was fantastic. They just keep living really solid issue after solid issue in that series. Colin Bunn's not getting enough credit for that book. I don't think it's selling that well either for Marvel. Lazarus 11 was fantastic. It was great.
Mm-hmm. Agree with that. Yeah, good stuff there.
And then I really like this Death of Wolverine so far. The first two issues have been really good. And of course, I'm not really expecting him to be dead that long, but you know, that so far it's been well done. And that's Charles Soule, and I thought he was spreading himself too thin, and maybe it kind of lost his step a little bit. But I think he's doing pretty good halfway through this mini series. I think it's pretty solid.
Based on what Charles was saying at the Fan Expo in Toronto, I expect Wolverine could well be dead for at least a year or so.
Wow.
I think that's a gutsy move, given the number of titles he's supporting. But they've apparently planned out for a ways, and there's been no mention of, well, how do we bring him back? And Charles Soule was very upfront. It's not like they're never going to bring him back. It's just they haven't talked about it, and this is how far out they've planned.
Yeah.
Or at least he hasn't been in any discussions around that, I think was his exact words. But yeah, that one, Death of Wolverine's a lot of fun. I agree with you entirely on Magneto and Lazarus. That's some great stuff. Thought we got a really good issue of Injustice Year 2.
Oh yeah, that was great. Holy smokes, that is really building to something.
Yeah.
Till the end. I can't. Oh, it's going to be great. And I don't know where the readers have gone for that, but it's as good as it was in the first volume. It really is.
I think the last issue or two, yes, but I think Year 2 of Injustice has faltered a little bit. I think having two installments versus three cuts the momentum. The shipping order and stuff like that, or shipping frequency and stuff, the rhythm's not quite there. And there have been a couple of times where it's good, but the speed of which the story was going in the first year, again, because 8-page installments or whatever it was, you got more story beats per issue, etc.
Yeah.
I think it's getting back to where it was, but I think shifting it to a $2.99 book versus, I guess it was $3.99 before.
Yeah.
Maybe they should go back.
Yeah, and add that third digital issue in instead of two. Yeah. Speaking of losing momentum, I thought Hawkeye put the brakes on by shifting back to a Kate-centric storyline.
Yeah.
I thought they had just started to win me over a little bit. They had a couple issues out on time, and I was trying to get back into it. They were trying some things with the sign language issue. I thought, okay, we're building to something. I know it's ending soon, so okay, this is good. And then we shift back to the West Coast and a Kate story and a change of artist, and I don't even know when we'll get another Clint story again. So that was disappointing.
Hopefully the next issue, it sounded like the Kate Bishop stuff was going to fold back into the main thing.
Yeah.
The book's gone off the rails.
It has, and people still talk about this book with the same reverence when it was, you know, in issue 8, 9, and 10, and it's not the same book. And I don't understand what unless they're reading in trade and they don't notice
that could be
the hiccups, because it seems to have not lost any favor with anyone but you and I.
Even in trade though, maybe they just haven't gotten to the point where they're going to have this huge delay because no issues came out for a number of months.
Possible.
I think it's stumbled. I think that they'll pull it together enough to kind of gracefully end the title, but mm-hmm. it's really unfortunate because it was such a great book this time last year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm loving what Dan Slott's doing over at Amazing with the Silk character. She's really interesting and such a great interaction with Peter Parker. That's something that's just fantastic. It's working really well for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she's a fun addition. Some of the stuff they do with her near the end of the issue, the job she gets and stuff, has a lot of potential.
Yeah.
I'm curious where they're going with the character. I'm loving it. But, I mean, Slott's been doing such a great job for so long, it's not a big surprise.
And then, surprise, surprise, Astro City was good.
Yeah.
I thought that was... I didn't expect a part two. You know, I wasn't sure. I kind of felt when last month's issue with, you know, Grandma and the robot graveyard there, that was the end of the story. And so it was nice to get the rest of it. And it was really, really well executed.
I think the end of the story really picked it up a lot. Because I liked some of the twists that got in there. Some of the, this is kind of not what's really going on or whatever. But it's not one that I would have expected or pushed for, hey, let's get a second part. But it worked. It panned out. And the second part was frankly better than the first.
Yeah.
I would not say...
And together, it's going to be a nice 1-2 punch, I think.
Yeah. I would not say it's one of the best stories out of this run, but none of them are bad.
None of them are bad, I don't think. You're exactly right there. I did mention earlier, I like Batgirl Futures End a lot. I thought that was really nice with all the different Batgirl. I thought that was a lot of fun. And I like that.
It's interesting, getting a little spoilery, although I think it's obvious from the cover, we technically have four Batgirls in this issue. In the current continuity of the New 52, prior to this issue, only one of them has ever been Batgirl. Two of them in the pre-Flashpoint continuity had both been Batgirls, but that got thrown out with the reboot. So it was fun to see those characters back, and the third one they pull in was interesting and a lot of fun. So I would say that was one of the highlights so far for me for the Future's End stuff.
Yeah, it was really cool, and I mean this is almost an Elseworld title though. I mean, none of this stuff is probably going to be canon. We just don't know.
I'm curious how soon after the end of this month, the end of the last Flashpoint or not Flashpoint, Future's End thing coming out, how soon the first event or first not event event, but the first thing that happens that means the Future's End as seen could not happen. I don't mean like all of it, but I mean there's going to be something. It's like, well, this now couldn't have happened.
Yeah, and who's going to? Well, it's going to have to be you as the guy who read them all and can catalog all that stuff to catch them.
I don't know how much I'll catch, but sooner or later somebody's going to do something. That's going to be that first thread that unravels it.
Yeah.
And going in, we know this isn't where they realistically expect the stuff to be 5 years from now.
You've got to assume that they're just take a stab at whatever you want to do for 5 years in the future, knowing that we'll really never get there.
But at what point do they introduce Stormguard or some of these other characters? I assume there are other new characters other than just him. He's the main one.
Yeah. And then the Batman Futures End was really fun. I liked it a lot. And, mm-hmm. And that one kind of could, I could see that playing out.
It was also a nice counterpoint, end cap, or whatever you want to call it, to some of what's happened in Zero Year and the recent issue where they dealt with Julian Day, the non-calendar man so far in the New 52.
Yeah, they did some really nice, It just did a really nice job with all the characters. There's some fun surprises in there. I recommend that one.
Really nice callbacks.
Yeah.
Couple of quick things. Preview Spotlight. The online solicits, as we record this, are available for all the publishers, premier publishers. I've got links in the forum for that. DCBS orders are due on September 24th, which, as this episode goes up on Monday the 22nd, means Wednesday you got to have your orders in. I say that as much to remind myself as anyone else, because I usually push it to the wire. And also on September 24th is when the new previews actually comes out. So at this point, you've got all the information you need for the premier publishers to do your picks. Diamond on the website has, a lot of information available as well when the previews comes out. I mean, this last month, you guys did a great job sending in the clips early. I really appreciate it. Makes it a lot easier for me to kind of prep the episode and get that going. Because usually...
Not all of us got them to you early.
I wasn't going to say that, Drew.
We tried.
It happens. I mean, but that's why I appreciate when other people do get it early. When everybody's at the last minute, I've had months where literally the Friday night before the Saturday morning deadline, it's like, am I going to have anything? And then almost literally overnight, 20 or 30 clips appear, versus, knowing ahead of time, this is what the episode's shaping up to look like, and I can prep the clips, level the audio, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I saw when the DC online solicits came out, so I put a quick dib in on something. So I'm going to redouble my efforts to get my clips in early this time.
I'm going to try over the weekend, if I have time, to actually figure out what my picks are going to be, so I can get that to DCBS and stuff, and get those put in for an extra discount. Some months it's easy, some months that's hard. Last month that was tough for me. A lot of things were mid-story or whatever. But since these episodes need to get done the same time as the monthly numbers come out for the sales stuff for the previous month, it winds up being a really busy weekend for me. Other thing I've got coming up is October 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. That's a Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Is Wizard World Austin. That's obviously here in Austin, Texas. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It's a bizarre thing. I think the same weekend as Austin City Limits, which is why they couldn't get the convention center on the Sunday. I'm curious how well this convention's going to work out this year, because there's a huge thing in town competing with it. But on Saturday at 11 a.m., if you're at the convention, over in room 6, Derek Royal of the Comics Alternative, myself, and a few other people, as many as we can rope into this, we're going to be doing a panel on podcasting and social media. We kind of got this into the program a little late. I was kind of busy on some stuff, and both Derek and I almost missed the deadline on this. But Derek fortunately was able to swing things and get it on the schedule. It's not going to be on the printed schedule, but it will be on the website. It will be on the app. We'd really like it if people would attend, ask questions, just show up, say hey. I'm assuming we're going to do lunch after that. There's a good place not far from the convention center that I always enjoy eating at. But it's usually a lot of fun just to talk podcasting, social media, comics, the whole kit and caboodle. That's pretty much what I got. You got anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
Hey, that'll do it for me.
Cool. It is starting to come down.
Through my headphones, you went in and out a lot.
You did some of that too.
So I don't know if you're gonna capture that through your Power Grammar or whatever. I'll go ahead and send you my side just in case.
That's what I was gonna recommend. Send me your side, because there were a couple of places you kind of warbled in and out.
Yeah.
And I'll marry the two together.
Okay.
So
nice tidy 30-some minute episode.
So have you stopped your clip?
Not yet.
Okay, we ready to do that?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1, stop. Join us next week as we discuss Sensation Comics featuring Wonder Woman number 2 from DC, all-new X-Men number 32 from Marvel, and George Perez's Sirens number 1 from Boom Studios. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.